You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me.
Do you have anything small to talk about?
I don't know. Talking about my mother moving in with us. That's kind of wild.
Yeah, that is wild.
My mother's getting on in years. I think she probably can't live by herself much longer.
Yeah.
We're talking about having her live in her own little tiny home, kind of like off from the main house.
Yeah.
It's kind of a big new idea.
Yeah, it is.
Right. We announced we were pregnant in the last episode,
but now that's looking iffy. We might be taking that back.
Yeah, that's looking iffy.
Yeah.
Right? Just describe quickly what happened.
Yeah, basically my HCG levels are not rising as much as they're supposed to. So the doctor called. It was actually the first time he's ever called me on the phone.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's weird. And they say there's like a 40% chance that we'll keep the pregnancy. So it's more likely than not that we won't.
HCG is the hormone that increases as the baby grows.
Yeah, I think it's the hormone that the embryo itself lets off.
Right. And you'll kind of find out in like 3-4 days when they do test you again. Is that right?
Yeah. Tuesday.
So if the numbers are like,
which by the way is really awkward because we're supposed to go, we're supposed to be traveling on Wednesday. I just realized.
Yeah, you can travel though, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
But again, I think that if the baby miscarries, which is what it would happen, right?
Well, I don't know.
Or do you need to get some kind of like DNC?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think no use overthinking it because we're just going to get the numbers on Tuesday and see what happens, right?
Yeah.
I'm kind of a believer that those numbers can sometimes vary. And I mean, a 40% chance is still a 40% chance.
Yeah, I know. When I was telling you that I've had like insane, really weird nausea and smell stuff. So
it
definitely seems like there's something weird with the levels. So like they increased really fast or something.
Right.
But who knows?
All right. So we're surrounded
by
the...
Trying to be peaceful about it.
That's right. That's right. We are. Well, your mother said, don't lose hope.
Right.
And I said, lose hope.
Yeah.
And you have to decide what to do.
Well, then my mom said, you should move the trip. And you're like, let's not move the trip.
I said, don't move the trip.
I mean, you were just kind
of saying to move the trip. Are we allowed to move the trip?
I mean... Yeah, we could.
All right, let's talk about it later.
Yeah.
But I think we're surrounded by the not yet born and the nearly dead, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
My mother and the new baby, so.
Yeah.
Life is expanding all around us.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, on those notes, both kind of positive because they're life in its diverse flux, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's always been beautiful in a certain way. So we're going to go to section 87.
Yeah.
Of contributions to philosophy of the event.
And continue
our march through Heidegger's book, which we are now, I would say...
Over a quarter through.
We're actually kind of exactly one third of the way through.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is cool.
That's wild.
Okay, so okay. Off to the end of the second third. Off you go, go.
87, the history of the first beginning, the history of metaphysics. Is the history of metaphysics. It is not the individual attempts at metaphysics, the individual theories that still tell us something now at the end of all metaphysics. It is only the history of metaphysics that does so. But this only is not a restriction. Rather, it is the demand for something more originary. Still less may we misconstrue, with the aim of transcending them, the individual forms of metaphysics as mere games. Instead, metaphysics must be taken now at the end in a serious way which essentially surpasses every acceptance and transmission of doctrinal fragments, every renewal of standpoints, and every blending and equalizing of many standpoints. Do you want to?
I mean, what does this last sentence mean? I mean, I think he's saying that you know, we can't look at metaphysics as just a series of individual attempts, or rather, maybe we can't. The history of metaphysics is not just a list of the individual attempts, it's the way metaphysics has transformed and transmigrated and transmogrified from thinker to thinker, an individual attempt to individual attempt, right? Mm-hmm. And metaphysics is not just a game. It's a traversing of the spirit. It's a process or a project that all philosophers have been involved in and all play a role in. And it says now metaphysics must be taken now at the end in a serious way, which essentially surpasses every acceptance and transmission of doctrinal fragments, every renewal of standpoints, every blending and equalizing of many standpoints. So he's actually saying metaphysics must be taken now in a serious way as being more than just doctrines, standpoints, blending together. I think he's probably saying we need to, well, he says there, we need to look at, take a more originary approach, and we need to look at the origins of metaphysics, and I think probably, for lack of a better phrase, deconstruct the compulsion to metaphysics and understand not only where it comes from, but what its causal dynamics and obsessions are. Mm-hmm. What it is as a field as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so the idea is that we're surpassing every acceptance and transmission of doctrinal fragments. Is that what that last sentence means? Or just that?
It seems to me that the taking serious of metaphysics will surpass every acceptance and transmission of doctrinal fragments.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Rather than just sort of accepting metaphysics as it is and just developing a new form of metaphysics and a new standpoint and continuing in the same old way. We're going to look at it in a more serious way and surpass that process and gain kind of a meta metaphysics or a post metaphysics.
That makes sense. Metaphysics becomes visible in its history only if the questions presiding in metaphysics are grasped and the way those questions are treated in metaphysics is unfolded. To what extent does history teach? What is meant thereby?
Yeah, he's saying a little what I said. You know, we need to understand how the questions have been formulated, how they've been treated, what kind of questions metaphysics has unfolded for us. Really look, like, in a sense, reverse engineer metaphysics, I would say. Mm. And then an interesting question here. To what extent does history teach what is meant thereby? So, you know, we always have this thing of we need to learn from history, mm-hmm. right? But Heidegger's asking, how does history teach? What is teaching? I mean, if history is just a series of events, then it's questionable how it would teach. If it's a series of lessons, the lessons of history, as they say, then we have to ask, how were those lessons formulated? Who decided that those were lessons? who decided that those were the only lessons, and do we accept that those lessons are actually teaching, or are they maybe not teaching, or are they maybe occluding or confusing or denying or rejecting or furthering ahistorical, anti-historical, or historiological agendas, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The occurrence of the question of beings as such, the occurrence of the interrogation of beingness, is in itself a determinant opening up of beings as beings, in such a way that the human being thereby receives essential determination, homo animal rationale, a determination which arises out of this opening up. Yet what does this opening up of beings actually open with regard to beingness and thereby with regard to being? A history, i.e. a beginning along with its derivations and its advancements, is required to make possible for those who are beginning to question the realization that refusal pertains intrinsically to the essence of being. This knowledge, because it thinks nihilism still more originarily, all the way down to the abandonment by being, is the genuine overcoming of nihilism. The history of the first beginning is in this way completely delivered from the semblance of futility and sheer errancy. Now, for the first time, a great illumination comes over all previous works of thought.
So he makes a call to do what he's often calling us to do, which is to question beings, interrogate beingness, open up beings as beings. And by looking into the question of being and beingness and beings as having being, the human being sort of opens up in its essential determination and in a sense its uniqueness, which is the homo animal rationale, or I would say the creature that can question being. Yet what is this opening up of beings actually open with regard to beingness and thereby with regard to being? What does it open? Well, it opens a history. So if we inquire into the, if we interrogate into beingness and open up beings, we open up a history, a beginning, along with its derivations and its advancements. So a beginning, history is required to make possible the realization that, well, yeah, okay, so my mistake. I'm not sure a history is an answer to what does this opening up of beings actually open with regard to beingness and thereby with regard to being. I mean, I think it is a history, this opening up of beings, and this interrogation of beingness will be a history. And then he advises us that a history, which this project will be, which is a beginning along with its derivation and its advancements, meaning every history that starts, which is kind of what we're talking about, is starting a history, will have derivations, what you can derive from it, what it's derived from, and where it advances to. Any history is required to make possible the realization that refusal pertains intrinsically to the essence of being. Now, that's a mysterious sentence to me. So I'm going to skip over that sentence. I'm going to read on and see if he gives us any. This knowledge, because it thinks nihilism still more originarily, all the way down to the abandonment by being, is the genuine overcoming of nihilism. So this knowledge, which is that a history is required to make possible the realization that refusal pertains intrinsically to the essence of being, this knowledge is the genuine overcoming of nihilism, right? Okay, so the history of the first beginning is in this way completely delivered from the semblance of futility and sheer errancy. So the history of the first beginning is delivered from the semblance, is appearance of futility and errancy. Now, for the first time, a great illumination comes over all previous works of thought. So all previous works of thought are basically, you know, the first beginning and its many manifestations. So let's look at these two sentences. Do you have anything to say about the sentence that starts with a history and the sentence that starts with this knowledge? Or am I
go
on
ahead,
my
you
own?
Keep going. I mean, I just keep if going. If you want me to talk, I can.
I mean, do you have anything to say about those two sentences in particular? Because we still have to unlock those.
Yeah. I mean, it seems that whatever's in that first sentence is the genuine overcoming of nihilism. How do you say that? Nihilism? Nihilism?
I think you can say it either way. Yeah, so I have a sort of a take on the first sentence, okay, starting with the history. So what he's saying here is, if we're going to create a history, which in a way is what he's calling us to do, if we're going to create a beginning with its derivations and advancements, right? If we're going to sort of start something, and we're going to call it a history, if we are those who are beginning to question things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that history must make it possible that one can realize that refusal pertains intrinsically to the essence of being. So, mm-hmm. Refusal. So, I don't know. But I guess what I'm thinking is, like, you know, histories prior to, well, there's a way of doing history where you say, this is the history, this is the story, this is the past, these are the forces, these are the causes, these are the trajectories and events, and they are irrefutable. They're undeniable. They're unavoidable. It's your history. Mm-hmm. You can't refuse it.
Mm-hmm.
It is objectively omnipotent over you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a certain level of metaphysics. That's a certain metaphysical claim,
mm-hmm.
right? That you're, in a sense, I mean, I feel like there's a common phrase for it. It says, we are our history.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And what he's saying is, for those of us who are beginning to question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Metaphysics, liberalism, historiology, these kind of things, machination. If we're going to make a history and start doing history and talking about these trajectories, these forces, these causes, these pasts, within that formulation of a history, we need to make possible, we need to allow room for a realization that refusing that metaphysical force of the historical is intrinsic to the experience or the hope of experiencing the essence of being. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
And I think then that why this knowledge,
knowledge. So he's just saying essentially that refusal.
Refusal is, of, go ahead.
Refusal is in the essence of being.
Refusal pertains intrinsically to the essence of being. So refusal is within the essence of being. The essence
right.
of being refers to, relates to, contains, is dependent upon refusal. Refusal relates us to the essence of being. Refusal and the essence of being have a core connection.
Right.
And so the question is, refusing what?
Yeah.
And I would say it's a refusal, literally refusing the history that you formulate. So you can formulate a history, but you can also refuse it. Does that make sense? Like,
aren't you refusing though the first beginning? Why are you refusing this new history you're creating?
Because the history, any history, is just a formulation of ideas.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is we're going to formulate ideas about the history of metaphysics, the history of being, the opening up of being. But we are allowed to also refuse it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of positing it as an absolute truth that you cannot refute, mm-hmm. or refuse. So I think refute is an interesting parallel to refuse. Mm-hmm. In other words, we're going to put forward a theory that we are also allowed to refute, mm-hmm. so that we can relate, so that we can discover and be appropriated by the essence of Bang. So we're not creating a history that is an irrefutable story. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking of liberals. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the way liberals talk about A, history, mm-hmm. B, their analysis of events, mm-hmm. C, stories, 3, race, 4, community, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Ethnicity. These are histories that you're not allowed to refute.
Right.
Because they have metaphysical force. Mm-hmm. Liberalism gives them metaphysical force. They are absolute truths. They are a priori. Mm-hmm. Right? And Heidegger is saying here, if we're going to do history, because we are those who are questioning metaphysics, this is not an absolute history. This mm-hmm. is not a metaphysical history. This is not an irrefutable history, because we always want to be relating to the essence of Bang, mm-hmm. which only comes through refutation. Even refuting our own histories.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's why he says this knowledge, right? This knowledge that refusal pertains intrinsically to the essence of Bang, even refuting the histories you conceive of, right? Mm-hmm. This knowledge thinks nihilism more originarily. So, all the way down to the abandonment by being, and this knowledge is the genuine overcoming of nihilism. So what is nihilism? Heidegger's talked a lot about it. I think Heidegger would call metaphysics, liberalism, irrefutable history, machination, absolute truths, nihilism. Mm-hmm. Because they engender the abandonment by being, mm-hmm. right? They create nothingness, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because they encourage us to relate to representations of being and not being. They encourage us to be abandoned by being, mm-hmm. and to abandon being. Mm-hmm. But if we remember this knowledge that refutation pertains intrinsically to the essence of Bang, we overcome nihilism. Mm-hmm. Because we discover the essence of Bang through the refusal of history, even the history we write and conceive of, and we thereby reject the nihilism that is metaphysics, liberalism, machination, and absolute truths. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he then says the history of the first beginning is in this way completely delivered from the semblance of futility and sheer errancy. So, you know, in the history of the first beginning, so the history of Greek philosophy, Greek thought on up to the present, is, if you were, you know, listen, read history books, history of philosophy books, you know, there's a lot of like, well, the Greeks thought that, but obviously we've seen through that and that's not true, right? Mm-hmm. So it's laced with a lot of futility and errancy. Well, the Greeks, they did know some things. And then, of course, in the Middle Ages, they really didn't know anything because they were just obsessed with God. And then, you know, there was, you know, Kant and Hegel, and they knew some things, but they weren't totally, you know, it's just this constant, mm-hmm. like, they're wrong, they're wrong, they're wrong. Some things they did were right, some things they did were wrong. Mm-hmm. But if we are actually going to do history in this way, where we're writing a history that we're allowed to refute, and really we're just looking for we're interrogating beingness, we're opening up beings as being, we're looking at the development of ideas and how they relate to the history of being, and how even the histories we tell about them, in refuting them, can get us into a relationship with Bang, then there's no more talk of sort of the futility and errancy of the old ideas. Mm-hmm. They were the ideas that were then. They were, and all put into the context of a study of being, they are what they were. Mm-hmm. Now, for the first time, a great illumination comes over all previous works of thought. That's my take. Do you have anything to?
No, sounds good.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, he's about to talk more about that.
He's about to show me that I'm completely wrong. Go ahead.
No. 88, the historical lecture courses belong in the sphere of this task. The, quote, historical lecture courses belong in the sphere of this task. To make visible Leibniz's unfathomably multifarious way of questioning, but to think Dasein instead of the monas. To follow Kant in carrying out his main steps, but through Dasein to overcome the, quote, transcendental approach. To work out Schelling's question of freedom, but to ground the question of, quote, modalities differently. To bring Hegel's systematics within the predominant view, but to think it quite oppositionally. And to venture an encounter with Nietzsche as the closest one, but to realize that he is the furthest one from the question of being. These are a few ways, independent and yet interrelated, leading always and only to knowledge of the one unique matter, that the essential occurrence of being requires the grounding of the truth of being, and that this grounding must be carried out as Dasein. Thereby all idealisms, as well as the previous metaphysics and metaphysics in general, are overcome as a necessary development of the first beginning. The latter in this way falls again into darkness, to be grasped as such only out of the other beginning.
Yeah, he kind of does say kind of a certain way some of the things I said, doesn't he? Yeah. So he wants to say basically that if we rethink various philosophers' ideas through the filter of Dasein, through the filter of being, and the things I've said about Dasein, then we're not asking, are there ideas right or wrong? We're just looking at how they pertain to the history of human being and Dasein. And all of these, you know, reinterrogations of these thinkers and their thoughts lead to the one unique matter, that the essential occurrence of Bang requires the grounding of the truth of Bang, and that this grounding must be carried out as Dasein. So essentially, as we're rediscovering these philosophers and their ideas, we're gonna ground the truth of Bang as Dasein, and that grounding is the basis from which we're going to, you know, move through the truth of Bang and in the investigations of thought as manifestations or relationships with Bang. All idealisms, as well as the previous metaphysics, are overcome as a necessary development of the first beginning. The latter in this way falls again into darkness, regresses such only out of the other beginning. So
the latter is the first beginning?
Yeah, so it's interesting. All idealisms and previous metaphysics and metaphysics are overcome as a necessary development of the first beginning. I don't know what that means. Overcome as. Do you have a sense for what that means? Does that mean that they are all basically refuted as necessary developments of the first beginning? And instead, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what it means. Meaning, we're going to look at the ideas, say, of Leibniz, of Kant, of Hegel, of Schelling, of Nietzsche. And we're going to see not that these are necessary developments of Greek thought, right? But they are iterations of Dasein seeking the truth of Bang, right? Mm-hmm. And in this way, the first beginning falls into darkness, mm-hmm. meaning it's not an irrefutable beginning of a series of necessary developments. It's actually just one stage in Dasein's quest for the truth of Bang. Mm-hmm. And we're only going to be able to grasp this first beginning out of the other beginning once mm-hmm. we start the other beginning. Mm-hmm. So that all kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it does.
Should we read a little more?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
89, the transition to the other beginning. To grasp Nietzsche as the end of Western metaphysics is not a historiological finding that concerns what lies behind us. It is rather the historical inception of the future of Western thought. The question of beings must be brought to its proper ground, i.e. to the question of the truth of being, and thinking, representing, which previously constituted the guideline and the horizontal structure of
the horizontal.
And the horizontal structure of every interpretation of beings is to be taken back into the grounding of the truth of being, i.e. back into Dasein. Quote, logic as the theory of correct thinking then becomes meditation on the essence of language as the naming that founds the truth of Bang. And as for Bang, hitherto understood in the form of beingness as the most general and most familiar, it now becomes as event the most unique and most alienating.
Yeah. I guess I got to do that, right?
I think so, yeah.
So Heidegger believes Nietzsche is the end of Western metaphysics. He's saying this is not a historiological finding that concerns what lies behind us. I'm not making some kind of story up about the history of about metaphysics and saying Nietzsche is like the hero that comes at the climax and on for these reasons. The question of beings must be... rather, in a sense, the question of beings must be brought to its proper ground, to the question of the truth of Bang. So, using Nietzsche as the historical inception of the future of Western thought, right? Mm-hmm. He's saying that Nietzsche is kind of the beginning of the question of beings being brought to its proper ground, i.e. the question of the truth of Bang. And thinking, which he here calls representing, which previously constituted the guideline and the horizontal structure of every interpretation of beings, is to be taken back into the grounding of the truth of Bang, i.e. back into Dasein. So, heavy stuff here. I mean, why is Nietzsche the inception of the future of Western thought? What does that have to do with the question of beings being brought to their proper ground, i.e. to the question of the truth of Bang? And what does that have to do with thinking or representing being taken back into the grounding of the truth of Bang, i.e. back into Dasein? Now, that would require a deep knowledge of Nietzsche, or at least a deep knowledge of Heidegger's sense of Nietzsche.
Yeah.
I can say that I have read quite a bit of Nietzsche about 3 decades ago, maybe more. But Nietzsche, how to say this? Nietzsche deconstructs the history of philosophy, the history of metaphysics. Nietzsche's overall approach was to dissect, analyze, and reveal the motives, histories, compulsions, obsessions, habits, mundane forces, subliminal forces, unconscious motivations behind the formulations of philosophy from Plato onward. And I think that's why Heidegger reveres him. I would say, in a sense, Nietzsche was a psychoanalyst of philosophy. He tried to interpret philosophy not through its own formulated abstract principles and just creating yet another metaphysic, but he tried to say philosophy is actually caused by these very non-philosophical forces. It's like in a sense, it's the symptom of a disease that is not philosophy. Philosophy is just the symptom of the disease. The disease is like forms of life, forms of desire, forms of thought. Mm-hmm. So that's Nietzsche. That's why he is the historical inception of the future of Western thought, because he subverted metaphysics, he subverted philosophy with that approach. Mm-hmm. And he brought the question of beings down to their proper ground, i.e. to the question of the truth of Bang, which is really the question of kind of what actually is going on. In the spatio-temporal playing field of philosophical revelations and emanations and abstractions. And so we have thinking, and he says, and thinking and representing, which previously constituted the guideline and the horizontal structure of every interpretation of being. So mm-hmm. he's really talking about philosophy prior to Nietzsche, where it's like, your thinking and your representing are used as guidelines and structures for interpreting beings mm-hmm. Via this historical inception of the future of Western thought as instituted by Nietzsche. It takes takes thought and representation back into the grounding of the truth of Bang, i.e. back into Dasein, back into sort of what it means to be a human being, what human beings are, how human beings operate, down into the kind of organic, natural humanness factors of philosophical creation. Now we have logic as the theory of correct thinking. Then becomes meditation on the essence of language as the naming that founds the truth of Bang. So we're gonna ground thinking in Dasein. We're also gonna take logic, right, and turn it into a meditation on the essence of language. Language, which is the naming that founds the truth of Bang. So logic is gonna move away from being a theory of correct thinking, mm-hmm. and instead it's gonna become a meditation on the essence of language. That has indeed happened. I mean, that's what contemporary linguistics is. And as for Bang, hitherto understood in the form of beingness as the most general and most familiar, so Bang used to be understood as beingness, and when we thought we were relating to Bang, we had a sense of relating to beingness as the most general and most familiar thing there is. Bang now is transformed into an event, and as such is the most unique and most alienating thing there is. Mm-hmm. It's not the most general and the most familiar. Mm-hmm. It's actually the most unique and most alienating. Mm-hmm. So this is a major paragraph that outlines some very specific and concretely described transformations in thinking mm-hmm. that we need to engage in as we seek to realize the other beginning. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Shall we read on a little bit? Okay, go ahead.
The transition to the other beginning carries out a division, one that does not in the least run between philosophical movements, idealism, realism, etc., or even between the stances of different, quote, worldviews. The transition divides the ascent of Bang and the grounding of the truth of Bang in Dasein from all occurrences and apprehendings of beings. What is divided is so decisively set apart that it is altogether impossible for there to exist any common sphere of division.
Yeah, let's look at that real quick. So the other beginning is going to cause a transition. The transition to the other beginning is going to cause a division. And it's not going to be a division between different sort of schools of philosophy, but it's or different worldviews. It's going to be a division between sort of, I would almost call it the world of Bang or the approach of Bang in Dasein from all occurrences and apprehendings of beings. So it's really going to become Bang over here and beings over there. Right? Mm-hmm. And this division is going to be very stark. Okay, let's keep reading. I think we can finish this section.
This decisiveness of the transition involves no compromise and no reconciliation, but only long periods of solitude and the stillest raptures at the fireside of Bang. Although Bang still remains completely thrust aside by the pale and artificial light of the quote beings, the quote reality that is close to life, end quote, of machination and lived experience.
Yeah. That makes sense, huh?
Yeah, you still gotta go through it, but should I finish?
We're not gonna compromise and we're not gonna reconcile these things. We're gonna be on the side of Bang. It's gonna involve long periods of being alone, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And sitting quietly in philosophical rapture at the fireside of Bang. We're gonna stay there. And we're going to be with Bang, even though Bang will remain completely thrust aside, in other words, in the world we live in, and in a sense, even in our own thinking, because we're new at this, by the pale and artificial light of the beings of machination and lived experience. Mm-hmm. Those things, those beings of what the beings that metaphysics and liberalism and machination and lived experience have handed us are still very predominant. And it's the reality that is close to life, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to still be very strong, but we are going to stay by the fireside of Bang. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
The transition to the other beginning is decided, and yet we do not know whither we are going, when the truth of Bang becomes true, and whence history, as the history of Bang, takes its steepest and shortest path.
Yeah, so we have decided to launch into the other beginning, but we really don't know what we're doing, right?
Yep.
Okay.
As the transitional ones of this transition, we must pass through an essential meditation on philosophy itself so that philosophy might attain the beginning from which it can completely be itself again without needing any support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to say, how do we relate this to low HCG numbers? Is that what you're going to say? Or to my mother coming to live with us? Is that what you're going to say? Or something?
Sure.
some Trumpism in the news? I don't know. Does this remind you of anything, any of this?
I mean, it does feel like a sort of almost a summarizing of some prior
it does.
Things.
It does. Yeah, it feels like a kind of
zooming out.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
Again, out comes poetic Heidegger with a fireside of Bang.
That's right. That's right. Little.
It's almost like a pep talk.
A little bucolic idol.
It's kind of a pep talk what? It's really hard.
You're right. We don't know where we're going. I don't know what we're doing. Yeah. We don't know when it's going to end.
And
we don't know.
It's a pale and artificial light next to beings.
Yeah.
Next to the pale. Wait.
Well, that's interesting because, we have the fireside of Bang being juxtaposed to the sort of neon and the street lights of imagination and yeah. lived experience, right?
The
what's the phrase? The fluorescence.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, the natural light of Bang next to the fluorescence of liberalism.
Yeah, one of like my first poems was, or foams, where it was a poem on a photo, was "Welcome to a World of Justified Fluorescence."
Mm. If you think of that. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Jeez, you were like 23 when you wrote that or something?
Yeah.
So ahead of your time.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But I don't know, just think of it as
justified fluorescence. Was it a photo of fluorescent lights? Or?
Yeah, it was actually a photo taken in Japan of like a lot of fluorescent lights.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's interesting to think about being as like that, because it is, it's so like, what's it? It's just so like, it's like magazine photos. It's just so like grabs your eyes and your heart and everything. And Bang's just sort of like over here, like.
Yeah.
I'm here too.
Yeah, that's good. I wanted to get, I wanted to give a nod to, you get mistaken for strangers by your own friends
yes.
when you pass them at night under the silvery, silvery Citibank lights.
Yep. It's a beautiful line. The National.
Yep. That's what I wanted to give a shout out to, The National. Because I told you I read Sean Lennon or Julian Lennon. I can't remember who I follow on X. One of them, one of Lennon's sons. He said, other than the lyrics of Dylan and Lennon, all the best lyricists are rappers. And I immediately thought, yeah, I don't know, you're missing Matt Berninger.
Yeah.
The lyricist for The National. Showered and blue blazered, fill yourself with quarters.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
He's an incredible poet.
Yeah.
A silvery, silvery city. Anyhow, welcome to a world of justified
totally.
Fluorescence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little, it feels a little nihilistic though, because it's
does?
Just a little like.
What feels nihilistic?
I mean, just like how far away it is. How far away.
How far away what is?
Like the fireside of Bang, how far away reaching Bang is.
Mm. You feel it's far away?
Yeah. I do.
You do. I can tell you do. You really do. Wow. Yeah. It's a long journey. It's true. But it's, you know, I think, I mean, I don't know, what's that phrase? The examined life is the only life worth living or something like that. I mean, once you sense that light, right? Even if that light is like 1,000 miles away and all you can see is a tiny flicker of it in the clouds, and even sometimes you can't even see it, right? You have to really be like, wow, at least I have that light, and I know that light's there, and I'm moving toward that light. Like, imagine if you weren't.
Yeah.
I mean, you might be happier, you might be more content, you might, you know, but would you really be as nth dimensional as you are? And would you really, you know, be living the crazy life?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can go just sort of sit in the fluorescence all your life if you want. You know what I mean? You can do that. A lot of people do that. Right? But I don't think you'd be content. I think it would bother you. I mean, you hate fluorescent light. You hate bright lights.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. There's one thing. You hate bright lights.
That's true.
So don't complain about the dim light of the fireside of day. Because that's exactly how much light you actually like in your life.
Wait, no. Hold on. Thrust aside by the pale and artificial light of the beings. No, beings are pale and artificial light, apparently.
No, it's not the pale and artificial light of the beings. It's the pale and artificial light of the beings of machination and lived experience.
Right.
So the beings that machination and lived experience hand us and say, this is being, these things have being, this is what is,
yeah.
This is the truth, this is beingness, that's what it is. Those things that liberalism shoves on us mm-hmm. are a pale and artificial light.
Yeah.
Now, pale light, I don't know if that means dim light.
Yeah.
I think it means kind of
unsaturated.
Just very, very, yeah, very white, painfully white.
Yeah.
Painfully white light, like white light is hard.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just got no, yeah, saturation.
Yeah.
Dimensionality to it. It's really like a wall of knives. Yeah. A two-dimensional wall of knives. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fireside is far away, but it's also right here.
Yes.
Isn't this podcast the fireside of Bang?
Definitely.
Isn't this lamp right here above our heads the fireside of Bang?
Yeah.
Isn't our love the fireside of Bang? Right?
Yeah.
But that's this section, as you said, is a pep talk.
Yeah.
Do you feel pepped?
I think so.
You also feel a little overwhelmed. It's like somebody just said to you, okay, we're going to march over that mountain and across that river and, you know, we don't know if we're going to win or not, right? So you're a little less inspired than you are kind of fatigued already. Yeah or no?
I mean, I think that it's like a... Like sometimes he just really is like laying out truths or something, or like really specific ways to think or consider things. And then he'll go into this sort of thing where he often gets more poetic. Like I remember something about like working the fields once,
yeah.
Or like, and then I think maybe a ship or something. And it's just like, it almost feels like he kind of is like pulling back on everything, I guess. He's like, oh, but I don't know. But it also feels like a pep talk at the same time. It does. It's like, yeah, because that's how it is. I mean, I think it's right that you're, it's just very,
well, when you say pulling,
me, it
when
feels.
You, when you say pulling back, what do you mean? He's sort of saying, okay, I know I've been talking about this as if it's going to happen and it's happening and it's amazing and we know exactly what we're doing. And now I'm pulling back and saying it's actually like being tied to a ship in the middle of the North Sea and you don't know where you are. Is that what
you
mean?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Pulling the rug out from under you in a sense? Like laying down the rug and be like, here's the rug. It's nice and warm and we know where we are. We know where, here we are, and it's soft and we're going to live on this rug. And then he goes, whoosh.
Kind of.
Is that what you mean by pulling back?
Yeah. I mean, it's realistic too, though. I mean, what he's saying is realistic. It's like honest, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think lose hope.
Yeah.
Lose hope.
Yeah.
I think what he's doing is he's saying, you know, I'm talking about something here. I'm talking about this other beginning. I'm talking about all the ways to do it. But we're also talking about the first beginning, which, by the way, was 2,500 years ago.
Yeah.
And so if you think you are going to traverse 2,500 years of Dasein and understand it all and get it all and become it all and just change it all, you're not. You're one of the transitioning ones. You're a transitioner. Mm-hmm. You're part of the transition. You're doing, you know, we're building a pyramid here. Right? Mm-hmm. Multiple generations will die building this pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
You're joining the history of philosophy, you're joining the history of the creation of the other beginning, and you're going to do what you can and I think that's also a caution against thinking you're just going to get it all and you're going to do it all and it's all going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
truth is the revealing of the self-concealer, revealing self-concealing, you know? So mm-hmm. only so much truth is going to be revealed to you. Mm-hmm. Not all the truth, right? But some truth. So it's a little like managing your metaphysical expectations, right? And I think also, like, you know, again, raised in liberalism, the compulsion, the expectation, the hope is that we're going to land on a metaphysical theory that we can just kind of sleep on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, it's going to make us comfortable. Yeah. It's going to cure all our anxiety. It's going to solve all the answers of life. It's liberalism. Liberalism answers everything. It mm-hmm. gives you the, it gives, it's like I saw this TikTok the other day. This woman is saying, she's like, you know, thing about liberals is that they're so convinced that they are all good. Mm. They're all good. They're like the good people. Mm-hmm. And that's their metaphysical absoluteness. Like they rest metaphysically in that. Mm-hmm. And I think Heidegger's saying, you know, that's being, that's the beingness of beings. That's the machination. That's lived experience. That's all this stuff. The truth of Bang is the event, and it's the most unique and most alienating. Mm-hmm. Lose hope. Mm-hmm. I mean, Obama's slogan was, what?
I can't remember something.
Hope.
Hope, yeah. Yeah.
What he was really saying is, and this is why it happened in the middle of Obama's, why wokeness was born when Obama won his second term, and his motto was hope, and yes, we can. That was his other motto. Si se puede, that hope and that yes we can in the election of his second term said to liberals, we can and we will finally, once and for all, eradicate the opposition. And 4 years later, look at what happened.
Oh my God, Trump was after Obama? Sorry. Pregnancy brain.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
what I mean, you wish
the
for.
Hope is delusional. Or.
Yeah.
Something. I mean, it's just like everyone predicting, saying Hillary Clinton was going to win.
Right. Yeah. And like the baby in your body, you know? I mean, if the baby dies and leaves your body, that is by far the best thing. So why would you be hoping, you know, what are you hoping for? Well, you're hoping, I mean,
well, I'm hoping that it's actually healthy and it will be fine.
Yeah. But why do that?
Yeah. Because I'm tired of shots.
I mean, I get that. Of course. You don't want to have more shots. But, you know, the shots suck and you have to do, I mean, I don't know if, yeah, well, no, I mean, you do 6 weeks of shots every time you do one of these implantations, right? It's a shot a night. It's a big needle. It's painful. It sucks. And you've done, what have we done? 2 weeks now? You will have done like 3 weeks of shots.
A month, actually.
Yeah, for a baby that, you know, doesn't make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But the, you know, I guess my overall sense is...
I was kind of just talking. It wasn't
No, you're not talking. That's a real thing. That's a real thing. I mean, I think you put that forward as a reason to hope.
Yeah.
But I would say, I don't know, I watch you hope. And it looks painful. Like, I know the shots are painful, but the hope itself seems like awful. Isn't it kind of?
I mean, I guess it also makes me think of just the hope of not having anxiety.
Right.
And like actually.
Right.
I mean, I've been thinking recently that I think with anxiety and like reading books or listening to podcasts other than our own, I have always had the hope that it will like help me realize something that will make me free from anxiety.
Yes.
That will like give me like, or seeing a therapist or something like that, that the person or something will be said that will,
yeah,
that will, yeah, just fix it all. But I think it's looking for pale and artificial light because it's not a, like, yeah.
And the event, which is the most unique and most alienating, as opposed to the most general and most familiar, the event is what happens. Right? Mm-hmm. And hope is a fixation on the preservation of the most general and most familiar. It's wanting some kind of generality to pervade all of being. And it's wanting what is most familiar to you, meaning sort of most comfortable, most known, most desired, to pervade everything as well, right?
Yeah.
But if we seek the truth of Bang, then we're seeking events that are unique and alienating. And that's what we want because it's the truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, the event of your pregnancy, the current pregnancy, it's going to be an event of some kind. And whatever event it is, it's going to be unique and it's going to be alienating.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be, if you're not hoping for it, if you're not infusing it with a craving for general predominance of some kind of static, standard, metaphysical, absolute, defined being, then it's going to be unique and alienating. And so the question is, what's wrong with that? Like, why are you seeking something other than the unique and the alienating? Like, if your baby stays, it's going to be unique and alienating. If your baby dies, it's going to be unique and alienating. And in both cases, it's going to be the truth of Bang. Yeah. It's not going to necessarily align with your hope, but maybe your hope should be for the truth of Bang.
Yeah.
In which case, whatever happens is exactly what you hope for, because then you get to experience Bang. Now,
that's you also very get to, lovely son.
I know. It's all crap. It's all crap. I know.
No, it is. I mean, hope for the truth of Bang is a nice way to put it.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's hard to have patience.
Huh?
It's hard to have patience.
I know it is. But let me
asks for infinite patience.
Let me say this. So I get hoping that the baby survives. But I think, I'm not sure it's just total woo-woo crap to say, what are we hoping for? How do we hope? How have we been trained to hope for certain things over and against other things? Yeah. Because if you actually are hoping for the truth of Bang, then you're doing a kind of unhopeful hoping, right? You're like hoping that anything happens, right? Not something specific, but anything. You're hoping to have the chance to experience an event. That's it.
Yeah.
Which means you're hoping to be alive for the next event that might occur to you.
Yeah.
So that's a hopeless hope, an unhoping hope.
Wait, why?
Well,
hope to have a chance to experience an event doesn't seem like a...
Well, because hope, as we've come to think of it, is hoping for a specific event.
Oh, like your desired outcome.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah. That hope, so the baby can live or the baby can die.
Yeah.
Right? If you have the hope for one of those, then no matter which one happens, what's going to happen to you is going to be kind of the fulfillment of a hope or the non-fulfillment of a hope.
Right.
You're not going to experience those events. You're going to experience a result of your hope.
That's very well said, yeah.
Right? And so you're not experiencing life.
Yeah.
But if you have this kind of unhoping hope and you hope, and again, hope / don't hope, at least in the liberal way, for the chance to experience the truth of bang,
yeah,
then you're going to experience the truth of bang. And you're going to experience something that I think Heidegger is saying is more originary.
Mm-hmm.
Is a new beginning, another beginning, is truth.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the culmination of your hope.
Mm-hmm.
Either the dashing or the culmination, you know, the dashing or the aggrandizement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, lose hope.
Yeah.
Lose liberal hope. Gain Heideggerian hope.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I think. I felt a lot of times like in that I don't actually experience something, like even like a birth, you know, like even something like that, because I'm more connected to, like, you're right, my like emotions or thoughts or feelings around it as opposed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Letting this, yeah, I don't know, letting the specificity or letting it just be.
Yeah,
what it is.
Yeah.
So that's.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I think in the next episode, we should talk about sort of my experience with the person that just stayed with us.
Yeah.
I won't say who they were, but.
A dear friend
of ours stayed with us recently and we had some interesting conversations. Kind of, this dear friend is a very liberal person. And I think it would be interesting to talk about some of that. But in driving that dear friend to the airport today, that dear friend said something to the effect of, they openly admitted that wokeness and anxiety are linked. And I said, well, why do you think they're linked? And she said, well, because people who are woke are more in touch with their feelings, and people who are in touch with their feelings have anxiety. And I thought, and I said, I wonder if it's actually the opposite, that like people who are in touch with their feelings don't have anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we have this sense of what it means to be in touch with your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that really mean? And what are you really in touch with?
Mm-hmm.
And if being in touch with your feelings means having anxiety, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that a formula that's like now taken as given?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe being
really
out of touch, being out of touch with your feelings is how you have anxiety. And when you get in touch with your feelings, but again, I'm not sure what in touch with your feelings means. I think it would be nice
that's a
long discussion.
Yeah.
So I think at the next episode, we should approach that question.
Yeah, yeah.
What the relationship is between anxiety and being in touch with your feelings and what you just said, which was, you know, experiencing events, experiencing the truth of bang, and having what get in your way? What did you say? Kind of your feelings or your... That's what spurred me to think about feelings.
Yeah, thoughts.
Yeah.
Thoughts as... Or the thoughts that are logical.
Yeah.
I guess the logic isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Just like thoughts that aren't real thoughts. like, yeah. And I think, yeah. I mean, that's a very good question. Like, who's what thoughts? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, should we get into it?
No, I don't think we should.
I don't think so.
I think we should do it next time.
Yeah.
We'll do it next time. We'll remember next time.
Yeah.
I will say, vis-a-vis the shots.
Mm-hmm.
Another dear friend of ours once said, those people in the World Trade Center would have given anything for your worst day.
Yes. I'm not really complaining about them. Jesus.
No, I know. But I'm saying, like, you know, shots. We're going to make it through the shots.
Yeah.
Right? I'm also kind of saying, I think, you know, needing to do more shots if you need to do a re-implantation, I don't think is worth the pain of hope. I think the hope is more painful than the shots.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hope, the shots, I've seen you do the shots. I do the shots with you every night. And they're painful. They're painful for a few moments. They're for a few minutes, right? It's also just painful to be in that phase of your life when you're giving yourself shots every night. It's kind of a downer, right?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it lasts all night as well, but yeah, not always.
Hope has been causing you pain for how many decades?
Yeah, that's true.
Consistent, daily, grinding, irresolvable, endemic, systemic, bone-crunching pain.
Yeah. That's true.
Okay, great. That's it. We're done?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll log off then. Right?
Yeah.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Choya podcast. For more information, visit leapingchoya.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.